Welcome to the first ever NCO Journal podcast. We have two very special guests with us today.
I'm Command Sergeant Major Thomas Williams. I'm the Dean of Professional Military Studies here at the United States Army Sergeant Major Academy. I'm joined here today with Master Sergeant Blackburn.
Hi, I'm Master Sergeant Elizabeth Blackburn, the Executive Officer for the United States Army Sergeant Major Academy.
Today we're going to discuss some questions that were brought up during the most recent town hall. The first question we're going to talk about is, how important do you consider communication skills to an NCO? Master Sergeant Blackburn, how important are communication skills?
Well, I think communication skills are the foundation for NCOs, communicating with their soldiers, communicating with higher level superiors. They're very important. The writing skills for the NCO are just as important based on today's digital army, the way we're going with correspondence and emails, and being able to effectively write in those correspondences and put down what you want to say and have someone else be able to understand it, don't you think?
No, I agree. Communication skills are important, and you touched on the writing aspect of it, but I want to backtrack and kind of talk about the communications piece and how important it is. As leaders, as NCOs, it's important that we communicate with not only our subordinates and our peers, but superiors as well, because our influence expands outside of our chain of command a lot of times. And especially today with social media and all the interaction we have with the communities, we have to be able to communicate not only the Army's message, but we have to be able to communicate effectively with the communities on what's important to us. I think throughout the years, as I've grown up through the military, I've kind of noticed the importance of communication. You know, it was kind of funny. I have a story. My first promotion board that I went to, my first sergeant told me, I'm from Tennessee originally, and I had a southern draw, and as you probably can tell, it's pretty thick. But he told me that I would never be an effective leader if I didn't work on my communication skills. He said I didn't have a good neutral tone of voice, and I wouldn't be able to reach all populations in the military. As we know, it's a very diverse melting pool of people in the Army, so you have to be able to communicate effectively, and sometimes you have to have that neutral tone of voice so everybody can understand. So I think those communication skills are very, very important and how we get our point across. And as you said, with today's correspondence and with social media, with email, everything being digitized, it's more important than ever to ensure that what you type is exactly what you want to say. Because once you send that out and press enter, and there's no bringing it back. So you have to make sure you can... your message is clear and concise when you send it out.
I agree. And getting down to the bottom line up front, you know, when it comes down to effectively communicating, a lot of times we as NCOs, we have a habit of, we want to explain everything first before we get to the bottom line. Right. I think effectively we get to the bottom line and then explain. So everybody understands what the intent is at first. And then we follow up with second, third order effects, how it will affect them by whatever we're trying to explain. Right. If we want them to accomplish a mission, or whether we want them to do college courses, whatever the end goal is in that process of communication, it's important that you do it effectively. And I think effective communication comes with bottom line up front.
Right, clear and concise, just like you said. And something to understand, I know myself and you, we're the X generation, but now with the newer millennials starting to join the military, they have a different way of communicating. You know, everything's text messaging, everything's on social media, and so it's more important than ever to be sure that you put that bottom line up front. But now more than ever, we have to explain the why. When I was a younger private and was asked why, or if I asked why, it was almost frowned upon. Don't ask why, just do. But now with today's generation, you have to ask why, because they kind of expect that. So you have to be able to explain it. So like you said, bottom line up front, and then explain the why.
And then the writing skills, they're so important now for NCOs. Like you said, especially with text messaging becoming the norm, right?
Yeah, everybody wants to shorthand everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
And you can't communicate effectively or write effectively in a text, especially, like you said, shorthand everything. Never mind, NVR, MND,
right.
You know, IDK. I get a text that says IDK, and I have to Google it to find out what IDK is.
And all the emojis now, jeez.
Right. So, effective writing skills are important in the military because the soldiers that we are enlisting today are in the generation to where everything is shorthand. Everything's their own acronym, their own made-up language, so to speak. So with the PMEs, SSD, BLC, they set the stage for the writing skills for an NCO. They show them how to be an effective writer and give them the skills that they need in order to write effectively within the military. So, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's very important that we place that emphasis on this. And we're moving in that direction now, starting with writing at the BLC level, the basic leader course level, and continuing that through the PME, each level of PME. But as you said, we have to place that emphasis on it. And if we don't do that, then the correspondence and the communication and the writing skills will never be what it needs to be, especially with this newer generation. You kind of have to change focus. Not saying I was the best writer being a next generation guy, but kind of learned through the years that you have to take time and educate yourself and become a better writer, better communicator. So yeah, it's important. Communication skills are important. So we were talking about writing skills. What about college education versus military education? Which one is more important? Which one is do you believe is the most important?
I think it's all dependent on an individual soldier or NCO. To me, they are equally the same. They're both important. College education helps you with your military education, especially now since all of the courses are being redesigned into the experiential learning model. So where it's a facilitated environment instead of a PowerPoint slide.
I'm lecture. We're moving away from lecture, trying to get that that group think. Mm-hmm. And they work together in the experiential learning model. Like you said, it's all about facilitation and learning from each other's experiences.
So with college already does that. It's not some colleges, I won't say all, but some colleges already do that. So it helps you get into the mindset when you're getting ready to take military courses. And military education builds the foundations for you to be an NCO. And they're also incorporating those college areas, so to speak, the writing, the reading, the communication with others, the group discussions. So military education is taking that, taking from the college, from the civilian education portion, and meshing them together to make it an effective overall course. So I think, to me, they're both equally important. It's not only for promotion, but for knowledge and education.
No, I agree. The way that the military education system is evolving, just like you said, we're taking straight from academia to make our military education similar or like. It's the adult education. I mean, take the USASMA fellowship program, for example. We have instructors go to a year-long Penn State adult education graduate program for them to come out and be instructors here at the Sergeant Major course. So it just goes to show how much emphasis the Army, the SMA, the leaders of our Army are placing on education for us to send Sergeant Majors to these courses to get graduate degrees. College education, is it more important than military education? No, I don't believe it is. I believe, like you said, military education is the foundation. That's where it all starts. But as you also said, college education builds on it. I started civilian education as a private, and I had my associates knocked out by 2001. I'd been in about 6 years at that time. My associates was complete, but I didn't take another class for 10 years. When 9/11 happened, it was 2011 before I took another college class, and I realized, you know, that I was falling behind my peers because when I got here to the Sergeant Major course, many of my peers had undergraduate degrees, a lot of them graduate degrees, and several had doctorate degrees. And so I knew I was behind my peers, and from 2011 until now, I've been enrolling in civilian education, getting my undergraduate and my graduate degree. So this isn't new. A lot of people have taken advantage of civilian education, and it's helped them throughout their career, increase their promotion rate. But now that the Army is placing the importance on college education again, or more importance on it, I believe we need to change our military education to be similar, like you said.
And I think we're already moving towards that with the Line of Effort 1, the NCO Strategy 2020. We're moving towards that. We're moving towards taking and comprising civilian education into our military education by using the writing skills and adding those in. So we're moving towards that as an Army, as a whole, as an NCO Corps, I think, is where we're going.
You know, and the main reason why we have college, that we need college education, I mean, not only is it going to make you better for when you transition out of the military, it's going to give you that leg up on your civilian counterparts, and hopefully you can transition to an equal position in the civilian sector, especially if you have your civilian education. But civilian education is for the unknown, preparing you for the unknown so you can adapt to the environment. And I believe that's where civilian education comes in, where it helps you become a critical thinker, a more strategic thinker, where military education, a lot of times growing up through the ranks, it's preparing you for the known, for that combat scenario, for that fight that you believe is ahead. And I believe civilian education will help, and as we redesign the military education as well, it will help us adapt to the unknown in the future. So we've talked about promotion. Civilian education would definitely help NCOs get promoted. But what other areas are, what are some other things that NCOs can do to improve their rates of promotion?
I would say diversity. Diversity in assignments is a good place to start, because then it shows that you can perform and you have the potential to perform in other jobs, and you perform consistently in different positions.
Let's talk about your career. How many, what kind of diversity do you have in your career?
I've been with aviation.
What's your MOS?
92 Yankee. Aviation, air defense artillery. I've been at two joint task force assignments, military intelligence, Corps of Engineers.
You've had several first sergeant positions, right?
I've had two first sergeant positions.
So you've been a master sergeant for, you've been master sergeant for how long?
4 years.
4 years. Okay, so you made rank pretty quick. So you made master sergeant 15, 16 years?
14 years.
Right? 14 years. That just goes to show, you know, that diversity definitely helped you out. And I believe green tab time too, probably, where you were
a lot of
leadership time, right? Right. Did you have any staff time?
I did Brigade S4, Battalion S4, a J4, so that I had staff time there. No operations staff time, just
logistics staff time.
Okay. So,
but you said you had green tab time, leadership time, right?
Mm-hmm. Platoon sergeant time.
How many months do you have as a platoon sergeant?
Probably about 36, I think it was.
Okay, and I think that's where they're trying to get back to now, is that 36 month mark, 24 to 36 month mark, to kind of separate you from your peers.
Okay. It was a long time, but I asked for it, so right. I kept asking for those positions.
And then as a first sergeant, I know you've had two assignments as a first sergeant, yeah. And now you're filling the sergeant major position. So, yeah, awesome. So what are some other things that we could do besides diversity? We talked about education, obviously, that and military education. That's a must. Now, the STEP program, what do you think about the STEP program?
Select, train, educate, and promote. I think it's great that we have moved back to that type of promotion model.
That's what I was going to say. That's what it was when we were younger NCOs. Yep.
The panel or the board selects you based on your potential, your performance, and of course your education, all the other things that encompass the board. But they select you based on that, whereas before you could get promoted, so E5, E6, as long as you had the points.
Right.
you'd get that promotion.
There were some automatic promotions, some integrated
promotion systems.
But now we have to, you know, you get selected by that board, and then they send you to the, you know, basic leader course or the advanced leader course to train you and educate you, and then that kind of certifies you, and then that's when you're allowed to be promoted once you have enough points, right?
I think that's one of the good things that the Army has transitioned back to, is the select, train, educate, and promote system that we had before.
So if you're in a an MOS where the points are high, and obviously it goes back to civilian education, military education, ensure that you do all you can to increase your chances of promotion after completion and certification at that NCO PDS level. What are some other things you could do to increase promotion?
Of course, you have the APFT, increasing your score there. 300 always gets you maxed out in that area. So
when you talk about PT, how do you think profiles play into promotion? Because we say it's important. I mean, it's not like Sergeant Major Daly says, it's not the important, most important thing you do every day, but it's the most important. It's not the most important thing you do that day, but it's the most important thing you do every day. So with those that, you know, I've got it. We've all been at war. People have ailments and injuries, but do you think profiles should be a discriminator for promotion?
I don't. I don't think they should be. I think at some points they are, especially combat arms MOSs, I would imagine. They're not a discriminator, but they weigh heavy, I think, on the selection factor. Whether it comes up against someone who doesn't have a permanent profile and scores 300, and someone who does have a permanent profile and can't score 300, I think that's a factor. I don't know. I've never been on a board. Because how is he supposed to do his job, right?
You're exactly right. I mean, but if you're looking at two packets and they're exactly the same, one scores a 300 and the other one has a profile and can't do the run and scored a 200, I mean, which one are you going to weigh heavier than the other? Especially with today's readiness being number one priority, right?
Exactly.
But, you know, I think it's kind of, I agree to disagree a little bit. I think PT is important. I mean, you know me well enough.
I think it's very important.
With my infantry background, and you spoke to that, combat arms, I mean, I think it's a discriminator there. Because it's hard to lead your soldiers if you're unable to perform the task. Say you can't run, or, you know, unable to do push-ups, or me, you know, it could be an issue on the battlefield. You don't want to take that, you don't want to have that leader out there that's going to slow down the organization or the unit, especially, like you said, if you're in a combat organization. But I think, like you said, though, it all depends on the job, their MOS. I don't necessarily need my finance specialist to be able to score 300. Do I want him to? Do I expect him to? Am I going to hold him to the same standard? Yes, but as long as he gets my unit's pay straight, you know, that's my biggest priority. That's my biggest concern. So I think it is based on the job that they perform.
I would agree. PRT is important, don't get me wrong.
I wish the most
important thing you do in the morning, I tell you what.
I wish we would have had PRT when I was a younger soldier. I probably wouldn't have so many aches and ailments rolling out of bed each morning. And I know, you know, kind of getting off topic here, but PRT, a lot of people are against it because they don't understand it, but I think a lot of it's the older generation like ourselves who are used to doing PT the old way. But if you believe in it and if you use it, I know it prevents injuries. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen the statistics. I've seen it in my own organization. So PRT, I'm a huge advocate of it. And I do it every morning when I do PT. I do a warm-up movement prep, so I'm a big advocate in cool down. Not to get off subject about PRT, but we could talk about physical fitness all day. I know me and you both could. So let's talk about, let's get back on course here and talk about the advantages or what we can do to improve our chances for promotion, or what some of the soldiers out there listening and some of the NCOs listening can do to improve their chances for promotion. PT, we've already said, is a big one. What else?
Weapons qual, of course, military education. I think military and civilian education are the two biggest ones because it takes time. You can't just say, bam.
Yeah,
I've got 40-hour course under my belt.
You can't knock it out on the weekend. I mean, yeah, right. there are correspondence courses out there that can kind of help. But, you know, one area I believe that we need to talk about is the counseling piece. That's going to get you promoted. You may ask, how's counseling going to get me promoted? You know, if you're not being counseled by your superior, you probably need to take the initiative and go up into to your squad leader or your platoon sergeant or your first sergeant and say, hey, I need to, you need to counsel me. I need to understand what my expectations are. It's all about expectation management. I don't know what to do or if I'm moving in the right direction if you don't give me some feedback. So, and I think it's just as much on the individual as it is the raider or the senior raider. You need to, and if you ask enough, they'll eventually sit down and counsel you. It shouldn't come to that, but it shows to them that you're taking pride in your profession and taking your promotion potential seriously. So what do you think about counseling, Sergeant Blackburn?
Like you said, I think it's a cornerstone, the building block for soldiers as an E1. If you're not counseling that soldier as a private, how do they know what they're supposed to do in order to get to E5? I understand it may seem like a long distance run, E1 to E5, yeah. But it's not. It's almost a sprint because the time it takes. And by the time you turn around and you're E4 looking at trying to get promoted to E5 with promotion points, you don't have what you need to get promoted. You don't have any military education. You don't have that civilian education. But if you counsel your soldiers starting at private E1, private E2, private first class, specialist, on what the goals are, what the intent is, what is their level of success, then you give them the tools that they need in order to get promoted, in order to start at that first level in the step, to be selected within your organization, to even go to a promotion board.
Right.
So counseling is it's important. It's fundamental.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It is fundamental. That's where that new soldier, that's where they learn from their leaders. That's where that foundation is built. I mean, you learn from good leaders, you learn from bad leaders. But if you have a new soldier and you expect them to succeed in the military and rise through the ranks, it all starts with their leadership at the lowest level. I was pretty fortunate to have good leaders as a private, and I had NCOs that counseled me and told me what right looks like. It might not have been the counseling like we have today, but it was definitely counseling that got their point across, and I knew what I needed. So counseling is very, very important in building that foundation. It helps set the stage for what you need to do for promotion. But how do you counsel? I mean, what's the most important aspect of counseling? What do you think is the most important before I share my thoughts?
Effective communication within the counseling. Feedback, guidance, intent, those are the most important factors in counseling. When it comes, whether you're counseling private E1 or you're counseling sergeant major.
Exactly right.
Those are the most important things. Because like you said, sergeant major, you can't get better, you can't meet the mission, you can't do what you're supposed to do if you have no idea what you're supposed to do.
No, you're exactly right. And I'll add to that as well. It all starts with getting to know your soldier. Because if I'm supposed to counsel you, but I don't know anything about you, then all you're going to expect is, or how it's received is going to be, well, he just wants me to do this, or he doesn't even know me. He's like, I've been doing that for the last 2 weeks and he doesn't even notice it, or whatever the case may be, or I get counseled, or I counsel you for showing up late or for missing something or whatever the case may be, but I didn't know that you had a personal problem. So it goes back to building that trust and rapport. Trust, to me, is the number one factor in counseling, because if you can't trust each other, you're not going to get that feedback from your subordinate. They're not going to come to you when you have issues. That's going to build the rapport. That's going to set the stage, and it's going to improve your relationship. when we were younger, it was, you know, shut up and color and do as I say, not as I do. Now it's, as we've gotten, as we've grown through the ranks, we understand how important relationships are. And as leaders, it's all about relationships. I mean, that's the number one thing that you need to focus on as a leader. It's about relationships. It's either relationships with your subordinates, relationships with your peers, relationships with your seniors. And then outside influences as well. It's all about relationships. So, just like you said, those are some important factors, the effective communication. But it all starts with that trust and that relationship that we have.
I agree.
You know, so one of the questions that we were asked were, you know, what do we think about the town halls and the use of social media and some of those conduits out there? What do you think about the recent TRADOC town halls that Sergeant Major Davenport has hosted?
I think they're good. They're great. The intent of the town hall was to capture a large audience of military members in order to provide them the information of what's going on, what's the state of the NCO, so to speak, how we're moving into the NCO strategy 2020,
right.
how we're incorporating STEP, how we're adding the SSDs, the six levels of SSDs, how we're moving towards integrating MLC, which will be on board next year for full implementation,
right.
How all of these things are going to come together to make our NCO core better. And it's given the opportunity for soldiers, NCOs across the Army to be able to participate in this forum.
Right, regardless of where you're at.
Regardless of where they're at.
I mean, you can be on leave, you can be deployed, it doesn't matter. You have the accessibility to the town hall through the streaming, so yeah.
And then having the SMEs in the chat rooms to answer the questions that right. anyone has on anything. They'll answer the questions based on, of course, what's going on, what the topic is that they're discussing. But if there's a question that's not on the topic, there's an SME there that can answer what's going on. And I think this second town hall that we had reached a lot more personnel than the first one.
I believe the word's getting out.
It is.
I think that TRADOC has ventured into new territory. It's probably long overdue with these town halls and live streaming them over the internet and using the chat rooms and stuff that we probably could have been doing for a while. And I think other organizations could be doing it as well. Some of the other COCOMs or ForceCom, they could also be using it as well. But that just goes back to who we were talking about earlier with the millennials. I mean, that's how they communicate. That's how they get their information. That's how the majority of America gets their information now, is over the internet. And to be able to have a town hall and put out information and give feedback to questions that are coming in real time, it doesn't get any better than that. You know, I remember, as you know, probably as we were growing up, we'd always have that question, well, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? But nobody could answer it because it was two or three levels above them. This gives the youngest soldier, newest soldier in the Army, an opportunity to ask a question. And, you know, there's no such thing as a dumb question. So gives them an opportunity to ask the question, let their voice be heard, even if it's just a comment. The town hall is it's a definite must. It's a definite sustain. Like you said, this last one, we reached more people than we did the first one. I believe it's going to continue to grow. It's similar to the podcast we're doing here with the NCO Journal. You know, we're venturing into new territory, trying to get more information out there, trying to talk about topics and spark conversation and communication so we can make our Army better.
It's an amazing platform to use the live feed, the chat rooms. It's a great platform to use in order to get the information out. Unlike before, the platforms we use, Milper messages,
yeah.
Alarax.
Yeah, we still use it, but yeah, this is,
I mean,
this gets to the lowest level.
To the lowest level.
Real time.
Right.
Instantaneous.
It is. It is. And it's amazing how many lives that it touches.
It's like the game that we used to play. You whisper something to somebody and it goes all the way around the room. By the time it gets to you, it's already changed. The subject's not even the same. So by the time information gets pushed down from higher, by the time it gets down to the lowest level, it sometimes is diluted or sometimes not even accurate. This gives us an opportunity, and it's just the importance of communication, like we were talking earlier, communication to the lowest level and providing that information. it's accurate information because you hear it straight from the source. So, Master Sergeant Blackburn, in reference to the town hall and us getting feedback from the formation, you know, recently down in Fort Hood, a soldier asked the Chief of Staff of the Army and the Sergeant Major of the Army about road sleeves, and they actually executed the pilot program, and now it's a it's authorized to roll your sleeves. What are your thoughts on the new change of uniform standard, or the to allow us to roll our sleeves?
Well, first off, let me just start off by saying that Sergeant Major of the Army commands Sergeant Major Daly. I think he has done the best in listening to what soldiers want. Right. Actually listening and hearing, and then not just reacting, but taking the time to investigate or see if...
Do the research, right?
Do the research, right?
Yeah. And get feedback from everybody.
From everyone, yeah. Right. And down, like you said, down to the lowest level, down into the formation.
It's definitely been more of a collaboration, I believe, with him as far as good ideas, not just a good idea and, hey, let's put this into effect, but let's send it out to the force and see what the force does.
Right. So I just want to say that that's great. And as far as the rolling of the sleeves, to each his own. Yeah. I'm glad we can do it, but I don't think it impacted me anyway, like it may have impacted others.
I mean, I just remember, you know, back when we had the BDUs.
BDUs,
you
yes.
You know, I enjoyed rolling my sleeves back then, but that was a different uniform. I tried rolling mine just to see what it looked like. It just didn't, with a pocket, it just didn't fit like the BDUs, because you could roll them tighter and roll them higher, but maybe they'll make a slight modification to the pocket in future to allow for us to roll them or for them to sit better, because a lot of them sit right at the elbow now when you roll them. But it is the senior commander's call at each unit or each installation that makes that call.
And then the implementation of the cuffing.
Yeah, cuffing
the field environment or deployed. Yeah. So I think that's good. Because I know a lot of mechanics and combat arms soldiers that really enjoy it. It's cooler. The buttons wouldn't get caught on things. The Velcro doesn't come off, you know.
I mean, it does, like that. Does allow for some ventilation. I'd be lying if I said I never cuffed mine before the change of the rule, because, you know, being out in the field patrolling at night as an infantryman, if it was hot, you know, and it's at night, I'd cuff mine to let some air in. But I definitely think it's a, you know, it's a leader's call as well.
Right.
All right, Sergeant Blackburn, let's move forward into a leadership problem. Talk about an issue that many of our leaders, many of our NCOs can relate to. Just for example, say you're a leader and you have a soldier that's not performing up to standard, and you've seen some awkward behavior and you don't understand why they're doing something out of character. What actions do you take to try to get that soldier back on board?
Well, first, of course, I would sit down with the soldier and find out what's really going on. Because if the soldier's just starting to act out or just having changes in his character, then there's a root cause. There's something.
You got to find the problem, right?
We got to figure out together what the problem is. You sit down with the soldier and you just talk. Communication.
Yeah,
hopefully the trust is there,
right.
So you can have that communication.
Yeah.
Sometimes, as a leader, soldiers don't want to talk to you. So there's other people that they will talk to, whether it's a peer or another soldier within the unit or outside of the unit. If you can't reach them, see if someone else can and then go from there. But I personally have never had an issue with not being able to talk to a soldier and find out exactly what the root cause is.
You're very approachable. I see how you are with your soldiers and they'll talk to you, they'll open up to you. But it goes back, like you said, to that trust issue and being approachable with one another, because that's how you're going to find out what the problem is. But if they don't want to talk to you, like you said, you have to find other avenues. Say the soldier that's acting out, you find out, they tell you they're having some finance issues and they're not able to pay all their bills. What type of things do you do to help that soldier out?
Depending on, of course, the severity of the financial issue, there's so many programs out there designed to help soldiers. They have the finance classes that sit you down, do a budget, list out all your bills, what your income is, and what your outcome is. you sit down, you go, you write all that out, and it shows you in black and white what the bottom line is on your finances. There's that program out there through ACS. They have the financial classes right. that you can go to. Depending, like I said, on the severity of the situation, AER is there. And they do the loans, they do right. the food closet, right. they do a lot of things. But of course, the main one for financial hardship is, of course, their loan program, which now doesn't require
commander signature,
right?
And up to a certain amount.
Yep, yeah, up to a certain amount. So yeah. That's always available for the soldiers. And of course, looking at their LES, right. making sure they're getting paid correctly.
You hit on it right there. That's the number one thing you have to do. Is you have to be engaged with a soldier, and you have to know they are being paid correctly, because maybe it's on the fault of the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's part of being a leader, is ensuring that you review all those statements and making sure that they're being paid and the deductions are coming out like they're supposed to. But one of the common mistakes, though, that a lot of leaders make, they tell them, hey, this is the source that will help you out. They outsource the problem. Right. They send them to ACS, send them to AAR, and then they wash their hands of them. So we have to be careful not to push our problems off to these outsourcing agencies. When my soldiers went to get an AAR loan, I went with them just to make sure, one, that I understood exactly what the problem was and that they were able to explain or able to tell AAR exactly what the problems were, but to help them so they're not going in there by themselves. So if there were questions or if they were had anxiety about it and maybe changed their mind the last time, but you have to still be part of the solution. You can't just allow and expect ACS or AER to solve your problems. Talked about doing a budget, talked about doing a class. Hey, go with them. If you do that, that shows that you're invested in them and in their families and invested in the fixing the problem. And it's just not you telling them what to do, but you actually actively doing it with them and helping them. But you're exactly right. I think that's what you have to do, is find out what the problem is, find out what agency can help, maybe even share some of our experiences so they know that they're not the only one in this situation, that we've all been there. Because I know when I was younger, I lived from paycheck to paycheck from time to time, and I wasn't that great with money until somebody squared me away. So yeah, it's all about one, education, two, being engaged, and three, following up with them, right?
And if it's not, for example, if their LES is fine and you go through their budget and everything looks great, there might be a deeper root cause. For example, gambling or even substance abuse. Those are things, too, that we would have to help with. Sending them to the right organization, showing them the right place to get help when it comes to if they have a gambling addiction. Where are they going? Sometimes, especially now with the way, like you said, everything's digitized, online gambling.
Right. No, you're exactly.
You know, I have a friend of mine. He's not in the Army. He gambles a lot online.
Yeah.
He can afford it, though. Not everyone can afford it.
Yeah.
And once you start, some people, it's hard to stop. Because you put that $5 down and you lose it and you think, well, I'm going to go just until I make it up.
You got to maintain control.
Right?
Once you lose control, you put all your money in the one basket and it's gone. So, you're exactly right. But you're right. You have to look even deeper. The problem may not always show itself right away. So, it goes back to, one, knowing your soldier, and two, talking to people that talk to him or her and seeing if there's any other issues that maybe we don't see. Because a lot of times it just takes a fresh set of eyes to look into a problem, and maybe they can see it because of their own experiences. So it's maybe sharing these issues with your peers. You know, if you're a squad leader, talk to, you know, your other squad leader, say, hey, I've got this soldier, you know, confidentiality, but I've got this soldier
right.
that has these issues. You know, what do you think some of the problems are? What are some things that you've done or you would do to help this soldier out? You know, and they can come up with some good ideas and help you with your problems. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're all a family. So it goes back to that trust. And if your soldiers believe that they're part of that family, part of that team, they'll hopefully open up to you and provide the feedback that you need to help them with their problems.
Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for a new podcast every month right here at the NCO Journal. And don't forget to like us on Facebook.